back. I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome to another one of our Urbanite Radio Stories. We are in the studio with Malaika Tamu Cooper, who is the owner of Dreads and Heads Natural Hair Care Center.
Yes.
And you hear her often on our sister commentator here on the air, Sally Mallory's show. She's on Sandy Mallory's show often. She's on this show today because of the article in Urbanite this month, and the article is about black hair care, but just about black hair and the whole revolution of black hair has taken place since the 60s and died down and grown back up, and all that we still argue about the notion of hair in this society. It's on every day. She joins in. She was happy to have her here. Akiba Solomon joins us by phone. She's a writer and editor who co-edited Naked, Black Women Bare All About Their Skin, Hair, Lips, Hips, Lips, and Other Parts. And Akiba, welcome. Good to have
you
with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
So, ladies, it's great to have you on the air here.
Well, thank you for having us.
410-319-8888 is the number here. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. So when you did this this story, and we just were talking before we went on the air, because Malaika Tamu Cooper and I shared the same neighborhood for a long time in Windsor Hills, and you started your salon.
Actually, I started my salon in the townhouse, in a townhouse that I had not far from Windsor Hills. And I had recently lost my job because I had decided to take a leap and lock my hair. And I was in corporate America, and corporate America at that point in time frowned on locks and natural hair because it wasn't part of the norm. So I went from making $40,000 a year in 1992 down to zero.
Well, that's a drop.
Yes. So I had to, fall back on some skills that were given to me, God-given skills given to me, and passed down, just like we passed down a lot of things through the generations, in hair care. I've actually been doing hair since I've been about 9 years old. And so I put out a flyer saying, hey, I'll do your hair at my house for $25, bring me a Coke, and we'll get your hair done. And it just blossomed. I realized that there were a lot of people out there who didn't want to put chemicals in their hair, who didn't want to chemically treat their hair, period, just like myself. And they didn't have an outlet or a place to go in order to groom their hair naturally. So I went from corporate America to ginger tea and Bob Marley in my kitchen, and it just moved from my kitchen in a townhouse to Windsor Hills. I renovated the first floor of my home in Windsor Hills to a salon, and then I got a building in Walbrook Junction, and I stayed there for about 9 years. And while I was there, I also opened a salon on Harford Road and one in Westview Mall. So my business kind of took off from there. Now I put on Baltimore's largest and only trade show on natural hair care, holistic beauty, and wearable art. I travel the world teaching hair in French Guyana, French West Indies period. I've been to Tunisia. I've been to Senegal. I've been, everywhere, you name it, teaching my techniques for natural hair care.
And Akiba, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate you joining us at the last minute here.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure to have you on the air. And I one of the things I was thinking about it with the show is that so much has happened even in the last few weeks, whether it's around certain performers who have changed their hair, to the critique that Michelle Obama keeps getting about her hair, to the YouTube video that everybody keeps talking about, which we'll talk about in a bit. And I wonder if you're surprised that we're still, I'm sure you're not surprised, we're still having this conversation about hair in America in this kind of intense way.
As you said, I'm not surprised at all, because if you look at the history of black hair and how it's been treated, you'll see that this conversation will go on until there's really a concerted effort to re-educate not only black women but black men and society at large about the meaning of our hair and the fact that natural hair, meaning the hair that actually grows out of your scalp, isn't something that needs to be fixed. It's something that needs to be cared for. So, no, I'm not surprised at all. And when I speak about the history, I'm talking about the dehumanization of black people through the mechanism of slavery, and with hair in particular, the idea that our hair was dirty, that it was often matted while we were coming over on the ships, and just in general, there was a straying away from the natural ways that we took care of our hair and the sort of ceremonial meanings of our hairstyles, and the way that our hair often was used as an identifier in terms of family background and in terms of culture. Mm-hmm. But when we were placed on those ships, you know, a lot of that was obliterated along with the language, mm-hmm. and along with the culture and the ethnicity. The hair was one of the ways that masters learned to re-educate slaves and to dehumanize them. So, you know, people can say, oh, that was a long time ago. But, you know, besides the Black Power movement, it really hasn't been any deep re-education around, again, what our hair means. So.
Well, there is a little bit going on. What she's talking about here can be found in a book called 400 Years Without a Comb.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's also a museum. In fact, I'm quite sure there's a museum in California called 400 Years Without a Comb.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point in time, we were not able to walk around with our hair uncovered as Black women.
Right.
Because our hair is our power. Our hair speaks volumes before we even open our mouths. It tells a lot about us. It tells our story. It can even tell you what part of the United States you're from just by how you, or even further than the United States, just by how you style your hair. You know, there are books and things out right now that aren't being well publicized. I, for one, have just written a book called Wash and Wear Hair, mm-hmm. teaching people how to deal with their hair in its natural state. For some strange reason, we've been taught to kill the kink in our hair as if there's something wrong with it, when it's just the way God designed us. There's also a book out called Let's Talk Hair by Pamela Farrell. That's what I consider the Bible of natural hair care. There is Everything You Want to Know About Locks from A to Z by Nakina Evans. You know, there are a lot of different educational tools that are out now.
Yeah, there's also Hair Story, which was actually
by Ingrid Banks, yes.
Oh, well, there's another Hair Story, actually. It's by Ayanna Bird and Lori Tharps, and it's a social history of Black hair.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Ayanna Bird is actually the woman who I co-edited Naked with. But the interesting thing that Malika just brought up is the idea that these books aren't well publicized, and I think that that's one of the issues, that, you know, we have these resources, but they aren't, I guess they're just not as prevalent as the messages that say that we need to change the natural kink. I mean, anything from videos to, you know, the mass marketing of chemicals to Black women to, you know, the stores on every corner of every, or on every other corner in urban centers that sell artificial hair or human hair that is not, you know, it's not traditionally African hair. So, you know, for all of the resources that we have out, there are so many alternate messages that tell us that our hair isn't okay.
I wonder, in some ways, what's going on now in our society when we talk about hair. And you, because this is kind of, you know how things can happen sometimes in these kind of social waves of the moment,
yeah,
that happen?
Fads.
And not necessarily about fads, just about things that we kind of focus and concentrate on for a bit and for a while that change the way we think about things. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're in one right now. I mean, you have all the books the two of you just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the controversy over this YouTube video that has kind of grabbed the nation, the world, that people are arguing about.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Chris Rock's new documentary on Black hair coming out in October that everybody was buzzing about.
Right, there was a Tyra Banks episode. Which,
right. The Tyra Banks episode.
Mm-hmm.
People kind of being controversial over the controversy over Michelle Obama and her hair.
Mm-hmm.
And her, I mean, so something's afoot.
It's always been there.
But for some reason, it's exploding out here right now. The conversation is happening.
We're just more verbal, and we have more things such as the internet, you know, that can spread things a little bit further. But just like the sister just said, you know, we can go into any of these Asian beauty outlets and see a whole wall of false hair. a whole wall of weave, and it tells our little girls and little boys, okay, you can just go in here and buy whatever it is that you want, but they don't tell them what exactly happens to them when they put that type of hair and things in their head. Do you know what spun fiberglass is?
Yep.
Spun fiberglass, you know the fiberglass that they put in the insulation in the walls?
Right.
That's what those weaves are. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now when people put that fiberglass in the wall for insulation, they put masks on, correct?
And gloves, because you can cut yourself up and hurt yourself. You can't breathe it in.
They put that and braid that into our children's hair, starting at 3 years old, mm-hmm. giving them a false sense of beauty. Now, you know when you buy spray paint, correct? Mm-hmm. You know that it's toxic. All right, so how do you think that they get all of these different colors on the weave? They use spray paint. So we're teaching our children, go ahead and make yourself sick, but we're going to put this spun fiberglass that we sprayed with toxic paint on your head and leave it on your head for a period of 6 to 8 weeks because it's all in the name of beauty. Instead of teaching our children that they're beautiful just the way they are, we give ourselves children a false sense of beauty every day.
And what you're saying here, Malika, I mean, it seems that one of the things that I mean, this is the battle that's been going on for a long time in America.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the kind of heroes that Akiva Solomon has kind of brought out to a lot of young women, and rightly so in many ways, is Madam C.J. Walker,
mm-hmm.
who created this hair care industry in a very different historical moment.
Right. Well, you have to look at the time. You're right.
That's
look
what I'm
at
saying.
The times
it's a different
when
historical moment.
When she was living, you know, at that point in time, like I said, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, it was forbidden for us to walk around with our hair, you know, uncovered. Hence, a lot of the people who are non-African American would call our hair dreadful, hence the word dreadlock. So I don't use the word dreadlock. I'll use the word either dread, knotty dread, or I will use the word lock, but I will not say dreadlock because, for one, there's nothing dreadful about my hair. But during that time when she was living, you know, we couldn't walk around with it uncovered. So she invented the straightening comb and a lot of different pomades and things like that to help us to assimilate to a European standard of beauty. But no one ever told her to work on her own aesthetic, her own African aesthetic of beauty.
But I also think, too, that Madam C.J. Walker, one of the things that she was trying to do is combat the massive breakage that she was seeing, because she was a traveling saleswoman and mm-hmm. she would see so many sisters with just broken hair and scalp problems because of the processing that they were doing on their own. And so, you know, for her time, I would consider her to be a hero. It's mm-hmm. just, I feel like what's missing there is the analysis that the sister just mentioned, that you have to put that in historical context. So now that we know that, or now that, you know, I hope we know that African hair is beautiful, because it actually grows out of our heads, you know, and so that it's acceptable and it's beyond acceptable.
Design.
It just it is who we are. Now that we know that, we can go beyond the late 1800s, as we have with many other pieces of technology and history. You know, it just seems like we're sort of stuck in the 1800s when we have a dialogue about black hair. But going back to what you said about the particular moment that we're in with hair, you know, I just wanted to chime in here and add another piece to it, in that black women are more visible than ever before in pop culture. You know, black women, you know, back in the 60s, you could see the Supremes, you could see Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, or you could see Diane Carroll. Hello?
Yeah, we're listening to you.
Okay,
we got you. I'm just listening. Go ahead.
But now, I mean, because of the explosion of media, number one, but number two, just the wholesale acceptance of black culture as pop culture, the top stars really are black women. And black women in pop culture generally have weaves at this point. Weaves and lace front wigs.
Mm-hmm. Still trying to assimilate to a European standard of beauty. And the Michelle Obama thing, she's going to be on the hot seat forever. They're always going to judge her. We, as even in our own race, we judge each other by how well we keep our hair and how well we keep our grooming. So no matter what, she's going to be judged. If one hair is out of place, it will be all over the United States. It will be everywhere right. If one hair is out of place, just because that's how we, you know, judge each other.
Well, I mean, just her, I mean, with Michelle Obama, her hair, her physicality, bearing arms, or being so tall, and she exudes kind of a power.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very threatening to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. All right. You know? Because for a long time we were been taught to speak when spoken to, sit back and shrink into the shadows and don't say anything and let the men take over. So to say, but now she is very visible. She's always in the public eye, and she's always on the hot seat.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, when you look at like I said, the latest thing on Twitter last month, the third biggest conversation on Twitter last month, and I hope I said the name right, is Solange's hair when she cut it off.
Cut it all off, yes,
right.
And people wrote things in like, another lazy African American woman who gave up and cut all her hair off.
Is that what that you saw a Twitter? You saw a tweet that said that.
Right. Pardon.
There's some feedback in my ears.
Yeah, there was a Twitter that did say that.
Justin and everybody across the glass. There's some feedback on the line that Akiba can't really hear and be heard. Can we?
But women have been wearing their hair short and natural for a long time. You know, they're just acting like it's something brand new. But I can remember back to Angela Davis with an afro. I can remember back to a lot of different women throughout history. Even you don't even have to go that far back. Go back 10 years ago, and India Arie, the singer, she cut off all her hair. But I've never seen your hair stop you from typing, filing, singing, doing whatever it is you need to do to make it here. So, you know, it's always somebody who's going to be judgmental about how another person wears their hair.
Well, I mean, but the scary thing is, in some ways, can you hear us now any better, Akiba?
Yes, I can.
Are they working on a line?
No, I can hear you.
Oh, good, good, great. That's good.
Okay.
So the scary thing is when I was thinking about this show today, and I was reading some of the other stuff on the web and kind of getting into the stuff on the web and reading what happened on Twitter in July with her, the comments that came through, I felt like
negative.
And well,
very negative.
You know what's interesting about the comments? I'm still here. Okay. What's interesting about those comments for me was just that you had folks who said some really negative things about Solange's hair. Some people who were overt with it, you know, they called her, you know, nappy and in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
And some other choice words. But then you also have folks who said you're so ignorant. you know, you're really ignorant, and you should leave her alone. Mm-hmm. And then you had Solange actually directly defending herself and saying, you know, this is something that I did 2 weeks ago. You know, I'm not hiding from anybody, and this is just a choice that I made, and this is something that I've been wanting to do for a while. And so, you know, in one way, it's really negative to just see all the bile in, you know, on paper. But then on the other hand, there's something a little bit revolutionary about allowing that kind of forum, because then the person can speak back to,
that's
to
right.
the other people, and they can correct them. You know, I would love to have a time where we don't have to deal with the bile, but, you know, in some ways it brings it up to the surface, and it really allows people to engage in something that for a long time we didn't even discuss. It was just assumed that you weren't supposed to cut all your hair off. And if you did, then, you know, people might whisper about you, or people might, you know, it might be the random person who would, you know, say negative things about your sexuality or false things about your sexuality.
Oh, my goodness, when I locked my hair, I had all kinds.
How many years ago is when you first locked your hair?
I've been natural since 87, and I've been locked since 93. And so at that point in time, it was not fashionable to wear locks, especially not a woman to wear locks.
Right.
You know, either you were dirty or unkept.
Well, a lot of people still think locks are dirty.
And
you hear it all the time.
The biggest myth. And then when people say locks are dirty, I say, no, locks are not dirty. People are dirty. If you do not wash, you will stink. So I wash my hair quite regularly, and you do not smell my locks. It is not that locks are dirty. It is that people are dirty. There are two different types of locks. There are cultivated locks, and there are uncultivated locks. Neither one is better than the other. They are just different. Some people roster locks. Some people choose to groom their locks. But all in all, it's still very clean. Now, you know, I think those people who had a lot of negative things to say about the sister cutting off her hair, they're operating under a lot of self-hatred, you know.
Yes.
When you cut your hair off, it forces you to look at you, at your own self, at your own face, at your own personality, and look in the mirror at you, you know, your inner beauty. It's not the hair and everything that goes along with it. And some people just don't like themselves.
Akiba?
The other interesting part about that, too, and I thought I heard you say that you saw a comment where someone said a lazy black woman cuts her hair off.
Yes, exactly. That's what it said in there, yeah.
You know, it's fascinating because, you know, I can't say for 100% sure, but I don't think Solange's hair was all her hair. I mean, it really did appear to be a weave or mm-hmm. a lace front wig.
And probably the best thing for her to do was to start over.
Right. And
because
so,
sometimes, you know, those weaves and things yank the hair, the entire hair follicle completely out.
Right. So it's almost like, I think there's like a shock to the system when you actually see a black woman in the public eyes hair for what it is. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, there was a paparazzi shot of Beyonce who didn't have a weave in, didn't have a wig on, and just had her hair back, and she was getting on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And there was all of this, you know, more internet commentary like, Beyonce's bald. Or, you know, look at Beyonce, she's bald.
Never
look
mind that she's one of the greatest singers.
Right.
Well, never mind, and also just never mind the fact that she actually wasn't bald. She just had a normal amount of hair. But, you know, people are so accustomed to seeing her and so many other artists and public figures, black public figures, wearing hair that really defies nature, that it's become the norm, and they
that's
get angry.
That's spun fiberglass. Call it what it is.
Spun fiberglass. Yeah. You know, or human hair that is, you know, that was purchased from a woman, probably in India.
No, and India is exactly right. Exactly where most of that's where a lot of people make their survive by selling their hair.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's. I mean, it's. You know, I just think there's something really sick about the idea that if a black woman has her own hair, that you should look at her like she's not normal.
Mm-hmm. Or if it's in its natural state. Do you know that our race is the only race, you know, you cannot buy a kitty perm for any other race of children but our own.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
I mean, Caucasians do not put kitty perms in their children's head. Black women will start out at the age of 3 putting a kitty perm, anything to change the texture of their
I'm just a boy here, so tell me what a kitty perm is.
Kitty perm is? So it's a perm. It's a relaxer to change the texture of the child's hair because they've never been taught to deal with their children's hair in its own natural state. So once the hair establishes itself and gets its own natural coil pattern, they become... they're at wit's end as to how to take care of it. So what they'll do is they'll go out and they'll buy a perm and put it in a child's hair starting at the age of 3. Chemically poisoning their children at the age of 3 and breaking the hair off before it has a chance to establish itself.
But it's still the more accepted norm. And I'm curious what our listeners think. Let's open the phones here, 410-319-8888. We're going to take a break in a few minutes. We want to get you to join us. Either write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Jump on to Facebook, fans of Mark Steiner, and we'll check what you're writing there on the Facebook and read your comments in the air, or call us at 410-319-8888. The controversy is still raging around hair in America. This program inspired, of course, is one of our Urbanite radio stories. There was an Urbanite article about Malaika Tamu Cooper's work in hair and her salon and the continuing battle and rage over the question of natural hair and what is natural hair. Should you have natural hair or should you straighten your hair? And the battle over the YouTube video that everybody has seen and arguing about. Some people thought the child was going through trauma when the mother was cutting her hair and the mother was cursing her daughter. She was pulling her hair. Of course, when I saw the video, the first thing that hit me was, I remember my little girl when she was that age, this woman just didn't know how to comb hair. That's mm-hmm. one thing she didn't know how to do. But there's more to it than that. And the whole thing is in our society now and changing the way we think. Are we hitting a new era where things might really be changing? What are your thoughts at 410-319-8888? We're going to come to your calls for our guests as soon as we come back from this break. We're joined by Akiba Solomon, who wrote in co-edited Naked, Black Women Bear All About Their Skin, Hair, Lips, Hips, and Other Parts. And Maleka Tamu Cooper, who is the centerpiece of the article in The Urbanite, is the owner of Dreads and Heads Natural Hair Care Salon. We'll go to all of our listeners calling in right now at 410-319-8888 when we return. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 7 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com. Don't go away. We're going to go right to the phones as soon as we return. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We have another one of our Urbanite Radio stories. It was built around the article about Maleka Tamu Cooper, who is the owner of the Dreads and Heads Natural Hair Care Centers. Does all kinds of consultations and teaching around the country, around the world. Akiba Solomon is with us. She's writer and editor who co-edited Naked, Black Women Bear All About Their Skin, Hair, Hips, Lips, and Other Parts. She joins us by the phone from New York. Let's open the phones here now at 410-319-8888. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Shindana in Woodlawn, you're on the air.
Yes. Stop laughing, Maleka. Okay.
Go ahead, Shindana.
I used to be a fashion model. I had all of those attachments, and I didn't feel like me. I felt phony. On one of my trips to Africa, I saw the women with their hair cut short, and my hair has been short ever since. If my hair grows long enough to brush my ear, I'll get it cut again. I think black women look beautiful just the way they are. They are exquisite. I think older women even look younger with their hair cut short. And if you want proof of it, turn your head and look at my baby. Isn't she beautiful?
Yes, she is.
Thank you.
That's your mother,
that's
right?
That's my mother. That's my biggest PR agent right there. That's my mother.
I had to call because, you know, it's time to stop this foolishness about downgrading black women's hair. There was a time during my lifetime where the blonde running across the grass on the commercial with the big blue eyes, she was the epitome of beauty. And then we were always in the back and we were always hidden. I think that black women are some of the most beautiful people in the world as their natural selves. They don't need all of these attachments.
Mm-hmm.
Shindana, thank you.
Yes.
It's only right that you should have been the first caller.
Yeah, my mother, the ex-Black Panther.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
See, that's another show, another time.
Well, we'll do that.
My hair now.
Let's do that. We'll do that show together another time.
Okay. Well, I just want to say thank you, and Maleka Mama's proud of you. I love you.
Love
Bye.
You, too.
Take care, love. Let's go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. And Peggy in Greenbelt, Maryland, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I'm calling just to make a comment. I have a girlfriend who is Caucasian. I'm African-American. I'm a dark-skinned African-American female. And she married an Asian man, and her son here came out a very coarse texture. And at the age of 13, she chemically relaxed his hair to try to get it to look as white as possible. But, of course, it didn't work, and him being a boy, she could cut it off. But I wanted to comment that not only African-Americans, but I think everybody, white, whatever, Asians, we try to change ourselves to look like the flowy blonde that's advertised. Because in America, anything black is considered not beautiful. You know, I'm an African, very dark-skinned woman. Mm-hmm. I married a white man. I have two children. So the hair is a mixture of the both of us. Of course, when my daughter got old enough, 16, Mom, can I relax my hair? And I'm like, honey, your hair is beautiful. But against my will, she did it. But I just wanted to say that as an African-American female, I'm proud of my skin tone. I love it. I love being dark skin. I wouldn't want nobody else's skin. And as far as the hair, this is the hair God gave me, and I'm going to wear it short and natural.
Peggy, thank you so much for being part of the show. What you said is very important. Akiba, you want to throw out a comment?
Well, I mean, I just think that what she says is true about the idea that people of many ethnicities want to fit in with the beauty standard that is pumped out every day. And so, you know, I think it's really important for people to notice it, to not become desensitized to the fact that we keep seeing the same thing over and over again or slight variations of it. I mean, I always think it's interesting to see now, you know, you can talk about, oh, well, you know, we have a range of women. We cover all kinds of beauty, anybody from J-Lo to Beyonce. But if you look, they have very similar attributes. And, you know, they're beautiful women in their own right. But there's very little diversity when you look at beauty standards. Even when you have women of color, they still have a very similar silhouette. They still have sort of aquiline features. They still have long hair, whether it's their own or not. They still have a tiny waist. They still have... Essentially, what we have are women of color who all fit the same profile. And so I think it's really important to notice that and to fight it.
410-319-8888. Malika Tamu Cooper and Akiba Solomon both with us this hour talking about still the battles going on in America over hair, why they're here, and what we should do about it. And Barbara in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Barbara.
Like, hello, how are you?
Welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment really quick. I wanted to say this, honestly, going natural was the best thing I've ever done. I made the decision to go natural. It took me a very, very long time because of that stigma I was afraid of. You know, oh my gosh, you know, my hair's going to be nappy. It's not going to look straight. What are people going to think about me? The whole nine. I mean, I kept a perm in my closet for a year. You know, honestly, I lie to you not. I had a lovely, I'm not advertising, but I had a perm in my closet for a full year because I was so afraid that, you know, once my hair started growing out, you know, what would people think of me? Like, you know, would I not get this promotion? You know, how would my boss look at me?
Mm-hmm. I lost a job.
Right. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
gosh.
Mm-hmm. But I made a conscious decision, and I had to look into myself, as Malika stated. You know, when you do stuff like that, when you make these drastic changes, you really look at yourself. It makes you look at who you are. And once I was able to really, once I'd made the transition, I loved who I became. Like, it was always there. I just had to bring it out. And if it actually took me going natural, cutting all my hair off to do this, to really identify who I really was inside, mm-hmm. then that was a decision I've made. Mm-hmm. So that was
you want to know something, Barb? When did the word nappy become such a bad word? That's what I want to know. When did the word nappy become such a bad word? We treat that word nappy as it's, you know, it has so many negative connotations. So, you know, the man Howard Stern, I think that's who it was.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Oh, you mean Don Imus?
Don Imus,
yes,
yeah,
right.
Who got in trouble for calling
people
nappy-headed hoes. And I would walk around and I would ask the people in my salon, were you more offended at the word nappy or were you more offended at the word hoe?
Right.
You know?
Well, I mean, what you just said, Malika, before you go back to the phones to Donna, Jahi, and Vanessa, the next three callers up, is that that's part of that's the root of this thing. I mean, nappy was slavery,
mm-hmm.
straighten it out to join white society, mm-hmm. get a job, and look like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and so nappy became a bad word, and now it's spent almost a 40-some-year struggle
mm-hmm.
since the 60s to become good word.
I put the word on my license plate. I had it on my license plate for 2 years, the word nappy. I'm just as proud to be nappy as I could be, and we need to start renewing our minds. That's what I want people to really get out of this show today, is that we need to start renewing our minds as to our own African aesthetic of beauty, you know, and embrace it. Not always try to fit into someone else's culture, you know. Learn to embrace your own and be proud of your own, nappy or not nappy. tight curl, loose curl, wave curl, curl pattern in your hair. Just embrace it. Be you.
Be who you are. I remember when my grandson, Avi, my oldest grandson, is 16 now at Poly, when he had to cut his dreads off because he had a medical problem. He had to cut his dreads off, and he was maybe 11 or 12 at the time. And then so he let his hair grow back, but he has his own natural, which is not dreads, mm-hmm. not locks, but yeah. His ancestry is African-American, Puerto Rican, Italian, Jewish, Native American,
mm-hmm.
and his hair is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's long, curly, flowing, but it's all his.
He's an African-American with curly hair.
Yes, exactly.
Okay,
that's how. Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
One drop makes you us. Okay?
That's the truth. This is America, isn't it?
Right.
410-319-8888. Donna in Baltimore, you're on the air.
How you doing, everybody?
Well, Donna, welcome to the show.
Yeah, let me tell you my story. My mother processed her hair when we were preteens because she did not want... She was tired of dealing with the straightening and the hauling, screaming, and the burning our scalp, and she didn't want to deal with the natural hair, so she eventually took us to a salon to get our hair processed, and I was traumatized by dealing with that because... to get your hair processed means your hair also gets burned, too, by the chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And I dealt with that I didn't know what my natural hair looked like or felt
right. mm-hmm.
until one day about 7 years ago, a coworker who's totally natural said, you need to stop processing your hair. Well, I had to because I was getting infections. Mm-hmm. Infections in my face.
The same ingredients in Drano.
Right. My sister and I had the same condition, and she went natural, and then I was forced to go natural. And then my coworker said, you need to just enjoy your natural hair. So I had to get used to that. And she took me to a hair salon. The founder of, I'm not saying she was the founder, but she was the one who fought in Congress to not allow, you remember they were trying to force women who braided hair to get a license.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Pam Farrell fought, her and her husband fought. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Fought for that. And she taught me, she had to reteach me all about natural hair care. And I was like, what? And I love it. I love it. But the people who I've gotten the most flack are from African Americans. European Americans love my hair. I have never gotten complaints from. I get it from African Americans.
My experience has always been that they don't actually know what it is, and so
I agree.
Sorry,
I agree. I don't think they know because if their hair like me, if their hair was processed in such an early age, then they're really not going to know what their natural hair feels like or its texture and whatever. And that's what I experienced. And go ahead.
Akiba, what were you trying to say?
Oh, no, what you mentioned about you never getting any flack from Europeans about your own natural hair, I was just saying that I don't think many of them actually can tell the difference.
No, they're unconscious.
But it actually speaks to the lack of education around black hair when you can't distinguish, between a black woman who has kinky hair, which is natural, to a black woman who has extensions in her hair or, a relaxer or what have you. I mean, I think every black woman knows about many, many beauty regimens that didn't necessarily pertain to her,
mm-hmm.
but she learns them through mass media and through advertising. Where does anybody learn about natural black hair care unless
mm-hmm.
you really seek it out? Yes.
That's why I've written one. There are no standards in the textbooks in cosmetology for natural hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written I've written one of the first textbooks called Wash and Wear Hair for Natural Hair. I define for you the coil patterns, textures, densities, and I teach you how to deal with them in each state and wherever you are on the totem pole. And I tour around teaching this. I've taken it upon myself. It's kind of like a ministry to me. As a matter of fact, I just had a class July 19th where I had over 20 women who were totally uneducated about their own natural hair, and I taught them how to do caring for their natural hair. I taught hair locking 101, advanced hair locking, creative lock styling, all of these classes to women who were totally in the dark about their own hair. There are no standards in cosmetology. They want you in the state of Maryland to get a license, and it's 2,500 hours to learn how to chemically treat hair. But they never want you, and now they're trying to figure out a way for us to get a license to do natural hair.
You think that should happen? Do you think
no,
was,
absolutely not.
I didn't
not.
Think you did. No, that's what
absolutely
you're saying.
Absolutely not.
Right.
You go, why would you want to make us get a license for something that's been handed down to us from generation to generation? It's our own culture. There's no way in the world that you can make us get a license.
You want to control everything.
All right.
Donna, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to another caller here, 410-319-8888. Vanessa, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hello. Hi. God, I'm really glad you have this topic on. I am mixed, black, white, and American Indian. And
one drop.
Go ahead.
I know, that's what they say. And my, I don't like to use the word, but I was kind of fortunate enough to get my dad's side of the family's hair, which is more like American Indian, very more manageable. My mom has very ethnic black hair. And but I can remember when I was very young, I had very long curly hair, but it was very bulky and frizzy and unruly in the very midsection. So for a little girl in the 70s and 80s, it was completely unmanageable. And in the fourth grade, I finally begged my mom to cut it off because I back then, you know, we didn't have flat irons. That's the best invention, as far as I'm concerned, was the flat iron for me. And back then, she did my hair like she would have done her own hair, which my hair wasn't quite as intense as hers. And I have to say it affected my psyche, and I didn't particularly feel pretty in the way she was doing my hair, and that's why I begged her to cut it. And long story short, all through the 80s, I got chemical relaxers because it was, you know, my white girlfriends had feathered hair, and that was the style, and that's how I wanted to wear my hair. And I did, and I paid a price for it years later. Through all the 80s and 90s, my hair was so damaged, it stopped growing, basically. And what I have found out now, after all these years...
Finish what you're saying, Vanessa.
Okay. And after all these years, I found that I decided to stop chemicals completely. And I thought, well, now it's time to deal with my hair as an adult and see what these new instruments and flat irons and conditioners can do for me. And it turns out I've been chemical-free for probably going on 10 years. And it's amazing how much easier it is to manage ethnic hair when it's healthy. And
well,
it doesn't...
Can I just say,
Akiba?
I'm feeling like the next step in your journey would be to examine some of the language that you've learned to use about hair in general. I mean, you've said things like unruly, you've said unmanageable, you've said better.
Mm-hmm.
You've
fortunate
said,
to have.
You said fortunate
hair.
To have. And this is in no way a personal attack, but I just think it's sort of a teachable moment when we look at how, you know, we are taught to talk about hair that is African. You very, very, you know, when you say things like unruly, the hair doesn't need to be rolled. The hair doesn't actually need to look like a European person's hair to be acceptable. And so I think that the next step, again, and I really commend you for going chemical free, but I think part of this journey is to just really zero in on why it wasn't okay for you to have this section of your hair that was kinky or however you described it, and why you thought that you were fortunate to have your father's side of, you know, your father's side reflected on your head.
Well, and yes, but what Vanessa was saying, what I also heard, though, Akiba and Malika, was that, I mean, we live in a culture where, and every culture like this on some levels, but we live in a culture where young people especially are really affected by their peers and what's said about their look. Mm-hmm. And how they look,
and how they're judged,
and they're judged by their look, and it can be a very painful experience. So
oh, certainly,
and so I mean, and this whole notion of I mean, the reality is, and maybe you all don't agree, but let me just throw it out there, but the reality is that the notion of nappy as beautiful is still relatively new and not that deep in America.
And that's what the sister and I are both here on this radio station trying to do. We're trying to re-educate our people on their own African beauty, on their own natural beauty. Accept yourself, you know, whatever the hand is that God dealt you, wherever you have two different coil patterns on your hair or three different coil patterns. I think that she was saying she had that curly in the top and mm-hmm. frizzy around the sides. You know, we need to teach people how to deal with their hair in their own natural state, not just slap a perm in it and make everybody look the same.
But also, I think the important thing for me, at least, because, you know, I was raised with natural hair. I wasn't allowed to straighten or chemically process my hair until high school. And so I had a perm for 3 years, and then I went natural, and ever since I've been natural, mm-hmm. right?
Well, but, at least you didn't have the jerry curl I had, sis.
No, I wasn't. I actually never wanted it. But, you know, the thing about that is, yes, I was now, as an adult, I can look back and say I'm glad that this was instilled in me. I was given context for why I wasn't allowed to process my hair. It was rooted in history, and it was rooted in a political way of thinking. But really, if tomorrow I went out and I got a perm, that wouldn't change the way I looked at myself. I think the important thing isn't so much the symbolic value of natural hair as it is really, really exploring why we feel like we have to have hair that looks European. And that's what I got from the last caller. That needs to be interrogated, and mm-hmm.
Her mind needs to be renewed.
And you know, in some ways it goes beyond even just the sense of European. Vanessa, I really appreciate being a part of the show. It reminds me of my little sister, whose hair was very typically Jewish.
Right.
Which meant it was very curly and thick and wavy. Mm-hmm. And she would go down to the basement and iron her hair mm-hmm. every day. Mm-hmm. To make it long and straight like all the blonde white girls around her.
Right.
You know, I mean,
that's definitely a reality.
You know, that it's like it's this standard we've created in America that is being shaken up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
more and more now you're seeing a lot of even though I subscribe to the one drop theory, you have a lot of mulatto people who are in the commercials on TV and the magazines and everything. So you can't really tell whether they're black or white anymore. It's just natural.
Yeah.
Seriously, it's just natural.
Let's try again. A call us in here. 410-319-8888. Jali, you've been holding on for a while. You're on the air.
Peace. I'm sorry. Jahi, brother. How you doing?
Good, Jahi. Welcome.
Peace,
all right,
Jahi.
How you doing, sisters? How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
All right. Listen, I just want to say, really, it's more of just a comment of encouragement. I want to say that it makes me feel so good. And I hear it all the time, but I'm just glad to hear it on the radio, of there are African-Americans, African people, who are speaking boldly yet clearly, encouraging, and in reference to the black and African aesthetic. Mm-hmm. That's something that I feel deeply about. And if I'm understanding your comments correctly, you're speaking about the black aesthetic in reference to hair, not just getting away from chemicals solely because of the harm that it does, mm-hmm. but you're dealing with the psychological trauma of chattel slavery, of racism and white supremacy that leads to certain negative and pejorative sentiments about the black aesthetic, if I'm understanding the comments that have been stated earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's really what's pleasing to me. Unfortunately, you know, I feel myself to have been blessed. You know, I came up, my parents were Moorish Americans, and my mother always had natural hair. She had a very, very cut, and it was beautiful. My wife, I think 2 years or two into our marriage, she decided to go natural, and she's never looked back. And her hair is just, to this day, she has very long, beautiful, beautiful locks, and I just can't get enough of them. So for me, it's beneficial. But I did want to say this, and I wanted the sister's comments. I know that this is not characteristic of all brothers, and I think this has to do, in my view, with the residual effects or with the actual effects of race and white supremacy in America. But when I was a student at Morgan State as an undergraduate, there were some brothers who wouldn't go near a sister unless she had a perm.
Right.
Okay. There were some brothers, if she had the sister's hair was very, very short and she didn't have any kind of chemicals or even color in her hair, you know, and this wasn't a lot, but there were some brothers, and I recall listening to some of the comments, and we always had a debate right there on the bridge or whatever place. So somehow the sister wasn't attractive enough, or she wasn't appealing enough. She didn't have enough hair, or the hair she had unkept. You know, and I think, you know, in an age or an era where persons, you know, due to the momentous occasion of having an African-American president, there are persons who try to marginalize the effects of white supremacy and act as if racism is no longer a fact.
Jay, I beg my pardon. So I'm breaking, so we don't have a very little time left. So I want to let folks respond to what you were saying. Malaika and Akiba, why don't you?
Well, I mean, I definitely think that how men view our hair and how men determine whether or not we're attractive based on the length of our hair and the texture of it plays a role in why some women talk about having to make a decision to go natural, or, you know, and it being a process. I think a lot of times embedded in that process is a fear that we're not going to be seen as attractive. In fact, mm-hmm. you know, when I was in high school, the reason why I decided to go natural was not because my hair had broken off from all the gold spray and the curling iron and the stacks and the hard curl that I put in it, but because one day I didn't have time to do all of that, and I went on a class trip, and it was just my natural hair out and kind of pushed back. And I had more boys try to talk to me that day than I had in the past 3 months. And so uh-huh. I was like, oh, I can actually do this.
Well, let me tell you that the minute I locked my hair, oh, my goodness, I met a different type of gentleman.
Yes,
you know?
That's true.
And now with locks in my hair, I make a presence the minute I walk into a room. So I'll have the brother run up and, can I get the door for you, my sister?
Mm-hmm.
Can I, yes, my sister, be careful what you say in front of this sister.
This
you
got
to come correct to her. You
this
know, you can't
true.
Cuss in front of her. That sister's a powerful sister right there. You better know what you're talking about if you're going to talk to her. So I was approached by a different type of gentleman.
So maybe changing the conscience about hair might change mm-hmm. different. All kinds of consciences at the
but
same time.
I got an entirely different respect from them, and I love it. So it kind of peeled away the riffraff.
There's one thing that I actually want to just put into the air before we have to break.
About 30 seconds.
Yes, it's just that I don't want people to feel guilty, or I don't want
right.
people to feel like sellouts or feel like they're less than if they don't have natural hair. But I also don't want people to feel ugly when they do have natural hair. The important thing for me is to accept who you are and what you look like and understand that you're beautiful and that there is something out there that tells us all the time that we're not, and you have to actually fight it and engage it. Some days it may not work out for you. You might not feel the best, but you can always turn around and get back up and feel beautiful.
Akiba Solomon and Malaika Tamu Cooper, thank you both so much for being here. It's been a great show.
Give thanks and praise.
We've learned
thank
a lot.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you
both for being around as well and being here with us. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Urbanite, Baltimore's free magazine of ideas and innovation. August is Urbanite's annual stories issue, featuring fiction, poetry, memoir, and plays from the region's emerging writers, plus a sneak preview of upcoming art season, a look at changes in troubled Sandtown, and tall tales from readers. Urbanite is available at over 700 locations. Please visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a list of our drop locations. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. We're engineered today by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Devin Finley, and Brad Kolodner. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows and hear additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.